Chapter 15. Which you? Which world? Only you can answer. How to free yourself from limitations. Since your conscious beliefs determine those unconscious functions that bring about your personal experience, your first step is to enlarge those beliefs. The concepts given in this book should have already helped you do that to some extent. Within your own subjective reality are traces of all those roads not taken, those abilities not used. You may think of yourself as primarily a parent, or mainly in terms of your job or profession. As much as possible, for now, forget the normal familiar light in which you see yourself, and consider your identity. Write down or enumerate all of your known physical and mental abilities, whether they have been developed or not, and all of those inclinations toward particular activities, even those only remotely considered, as well as those that have come at all vividly to mind. These represent the varied probable characteristics from which you have chosen to activate your particular main interest. Out of these attributes, therefore, you chose what you now consider to be your hard-bed reality. Any of those directions, followed, can enrich the existence that you know, and in turn open up other probabilities that now escape you. The main image of yourself that you have held has, to a large extent, also closed your mind to these other probable interests and identifications. If you think in terms of a multidimensional self, then you will realize that you have many more avenues open to expression and fulfillment than you have been using. These probable achievements will lie latent unless you consciously decide to bring them into being. Whatever talents you sense you have can be developed only if you determine to do so. The simple act of decision will then activate the unconscious mechanisms. You, as a personality, regardless of your health, wealth or circumstances, have a rich variety of probable experience from which to choose. Consciously you must realize this and seize the direction for your own life. Even if you say, "I will go along with all life offers," you are making a conscious decision. If you say, "I am powerless to direct my life," you are also making a deliberate choice, and in that case a limiting one. The path of experience is nowhere settled. There is no one road that does not have avenues to another. There are deep veins of probable actions ever available to you at any given time. Your imagination can be of great value, allowing you to open yourself to such courses. You can then use it to help you bring these into being. If you are poor, you chose that reality from many probable ones that did not involve poverty, and that are still open. If you chose illness, again there is a probable reality ready for initiation in which you choose health. If you are lonely, there are probable friends you refused to meet in the past, but who are readily available. In your mind, therefore, see those probable abilities or events taking place. As you do, the intensity of your desire brings them into your experience. There are no boundaries, again, set about the self. There are literally many other probable use. You can draw upon their abilities, as in their own way they call upon your own, for you are all intimately connected. You must realize that you are indeed a probable you. Your experience is the result of beliefs. Your neuronal structure necessitates a certain focus so that other experiences counter to your conscious assumptions remain probable or latent. Alter the beliefs and improbable self can, within certain limitations, be actualized. What you must understand is this: each of the events in each of your lives was once probable. From a given field of action, then, you choose those happenings that will be physically materialized. This operates in individual and mass terms. Suppose that today your home was robbed. Yesterday, the theft was one of innumerable probable events. I chose such an example because more than one person would have to be involved: the victim and the robber. Pause. Why was your home ransacked, and not your neighbors? In one way or another, through your conscious thought you attracted such an event, and drew it from probability into actuality. The occurrence would be an accumulation of energy, turned into action, and be brought about by corollary beliefs. You may be convinced that human nature is evil, or that no one is safe from another's aggression, or that people are motivated mainly by greed. Such beliefs attract their own reality. If you have anything worth losing, you are then automatically convinced that someone else will take it from you, or try their hardest to do so. In your own WAV, you send out messages to just such a person. On basic levels your convictions will be quite similar, but one will see himself as the victim and one as the aggressor. That is, each of you will react differently into the same set of beliefs. However, the two of you are necessary if a crime of that nature is, or is to be, committed. The beliefs of both of you find justification in physical life, and only reinforce themselves. The fear of robbers attracts robbers. If you think that men are evil, however, you are often not able to examine that as a belief, but take it as a condition of reality. All of your present experience was drawn from probable reality. During your life, any event must come through your creaturehood, with the built-in time recognition that is so largely a part of your neurological structure, so usually there is a lag, a lapse in time, during which your beliefs cause material actualization. When you try to change your convictions in order to change your experience, you also have to first stop the momentum that you have already built up, so to speak. You are changing the messages while the body is used to reacting smoothly, unquestioningly, to a certain set of beliefs. There is a steady even flow in which conscious activity through the neurological structure brings about events, and a familiar pattern of reaction is established. When you alter these conscious beliefs through effort, then a period of time is necessary while the structure learns to adjust to the new preferred situation. If beliefs are changed overnight, comparatively less time is required. In a manner of speaking, each belief can be seen as a powerful station, pulling to it from fields of probabilities only those signals to which it is attuned, and blocking out all others. When you set up a new station, there may be some static or bleed through from an old one for a while. Any ability you have, then, can be brought in more clearly, amplified, and become practical rather than probable. But in such a case, you must concentrate upon the attribute, not, for example, upon the fact that you have not used it well thus far. An artist produces a body of work in his lifetime. Each painting is but one materialization, one focused presentation of an endless variety of probable paintings. The actual work involved in the selection of data is still made according to the beliefs in the artist's conscious mind as to who he is, how good an artist he is, what kind of artist he is, what school of artistic beliefs he subscribes to, his ideas of society and his place in it, and aesthetic and economic values, to name but a few. The same sort of thing operates in the actualization of any event in which you are involved. You create your life, then. Inner images are of great importance to the artist. He tries to project them upon his canvas or board. Again, you are each your own artist, and your inner visualizations become models for other situations and events. The artist utilizes training and mixes his colors in order to give artistic flesh to his painting. The images in your mind draw to themselves all the proper emotional energy and power needed to fill them out as physical events. You can change the picture of your life at any time if only you realize that it is simply the one portrait of yourself that you have created from an unlimited amount of probable ones. The peculiar aspect of your own probable portraits will still be characteristic of you, and no other. The abilities, strengths and variants that you may want to actualize are already latent, in your terms, and at your disposal. Suppose that you are unhealthy and desire health. If you understand the nature of probabilities, you will not need to pretend to ignore your present situation. You will recognize it instead as a probable reality that you have physically materialized. Taking that for granted, you will then begin the process necessary to bring a different probability into physical experience. You will do this by concentrating upon what you want, but feeling no conflict between that and what you have, because one will not contradict the other. Each will be seen as a reflection of belief in daily life. As it took some time to build up your present image with its unhealthy aspects, so it may take time to change that picture. But concentration upon the present unhealthy situation will only prolong it. Period. Each condition is as real or unreal as the other. Which you? Which world? You have your choice, broadly, within certain frameworks that you have chosen as a part of your creaturehood. The past as you think of it, and the subconscious, again as you think of it, have little to do with your present experience outside of your beliefs about them. The past contains for each of you some moments of joy, strength, creativity and splendor, as well as episodes of unhappiness, despair perhaps, turmoil and cruelty. Your present convictions will act like a magnet, activating all such past issues, happy or sad. You will choose from your previous experience all of those events that reinforce your conscious beliefs, and so ignore those that do not. The latter may even seem to be non-existent. As mentioned in this book, in Chapter 4, for instance, the emerging memories will then turn on the body mechanisms, merging past and present in some kind of harmonious picture. This means that the pieces will fit together whether they are joyful or not. This joining of the past and present, In that context, predisposes you to similar future events, for you have geared yourself for them. Change now quite practically alters both the past and the future. For you, because of your neurological organization, the present is obviously the only point from which past and future can be changed, or when action becomes affected. I am not speaking symbolically. In the most intimate of terms, your past and future are modified by your present reactions. Alterations occur within the body. Circuits within the nervous system are changed, and energies that you do not understand seek out new connections on much deeper levels far beyond consciousness. Your present beliefs govern the actualization of events. Creativity and experience are being formed moment by each individual. You must understand that your presence is the point at which flesh and matter meet with the spirit. Therefore, the present is your point of power in your current lifetime, as you think of it. If you assign greater force to die past, then you will feel ineffective and deny yourself your own energy. For an exercise, sit with your eyes wide open, looking about you, and realize that this moment represents the point of your power, through which you can affect both past and future events. The present scene before you, with its intimate physical experience, is the result of action and other such presence. Do not be intimidated, therefore, by the past or the future. There is no need at all for undesirable aspects of your contemporary reality to be projected into the future, unless you use the power of the present to do so. If you learn to get hold of this feeling of power now, you can use it most effectively to alter your life situation in whatever way you choose, again, within those limitations set by your creaturehood. If you were born without a limb, for example, your power in the present cannot automatically regenerate it in this life, although in other systems of reality you do possess that limb. See Seth's preface, as well Chapter 2. Exterior conditions can always be changed if you understand the principles of which I am speaking. Diseases can be eliminated, even those that seem fatal, but only if the beliefs behind them are erased or altered enough so that their specific focusing effect upon the body is sufficiently released. The present as you think of it, and in practical working terms, is that point at which you select your physical experience from all those events that could be materialized. Your physical circumstances change automatically as your beliefs do. As your knowledge grows, so your experience becomes more fulfilling. This does not necessarily mean that it evens out in any way, or that there are not peaks and valleys. Each aspiration presupposes the admission of a lack, each challenge presupposes a barrier to be overcome. The more adventurous will often choose greater challenges, and so in their minds the contrasts between what they want to achieve and their present status can seem to be impossible. In each case, however, the point of power is the present, and from that moment you choose which you, and which world. The experience of a country is the cumulative result of the choice of each individual in it, so as you choose your own circumstances, you affect each other person within your country and your world. In many native cultures, an individual is not considered in terms of his age at all, and the numbering of years is regarded as insignificant. In fact, a man may not know his age as you think of it. It would do you all good, young, middle-aged and old alike, to forget the number of your years, because in your culture so many beliefs are limiting in those ways. Youth is denied its wisdom and old age is denied its joy. To pretend to ignore your age, to act young because you fear your age, is no answer. See the 644th session in Chapter 11. In your terms, our point of reality and power is, once more, in your current experience. A realization of this would allow you at any age to draw upon qualities and knowledge that existed in your past or will exist in your future. Your ages are probable, simultaneous. Although time does not basically exist as you know it, you are neurologically forced to perceive your life as a series of passing moments. As creatures, you are born young and grow older. Yet the animals, as creatures, are not as limited in their experience in that regard. They have no beliefs in old age that automatically shut down their abilities. So left alone, while they do physically die as all creatures must in those terms, they do not deteriorate in the same way. You do not understand the communications between yourselves and pets, for example, where in their own way they interpret and react to your beliefs. Asterisk, they mirror your ideas, then, and so become vulnerable as they would not be in their natural circumstances. In greater terms, their relationship with you is natural, of course, but their innate realization that the creature's point of power is in the present is to some degree undermined by their own receptivity and translation of your beliefs. A young kitten is treated differently than an older one. The cat responds to such conditioning. In the same way, your own conclusions about age become fact in your experience. In line with them, if you could convince yourself that you are 10 years younger, or 10 years older, then it would be faithfully reflected in your personal environment. If you were 20, you would be able to draw upon the wisdom you imagine you would have at 30. If you were 60, you would be able to use the physical strength you imagined was denied you now, but available then. All of this would be physically and biologically expressed within your body as well. Which you? Which world? If you are lonely, it is because you believe in your loneliness in this present point that you acknowledge as time. From what seems to be the past, you draw only those memories that reinforce your condition, and you project those into the future. Physically, you are overwhelming your body as it responds to a state of loneliness through chemical and hormonal reactions. You are also denying your own point of action within the present. Vitamins, better food, medical attention, may temporarily rejuvenate the body, but unless you change your beliefs, it will quickly become swamped again by your feelings of depression. In such a case, you must realize that you make your own loneliness, and resolve to change through both thought and action. Action is thought in physical motion, outwardly perceived. I would like the sentence that I am going to give you placed separately on the page, in larger type so it is set off, and underlined. The present is the point of power. The above is one of the most important sentences in this book in practical terms, and working within the framework of time as you understand it. As mentioned earlier, in the 653rd session in Chapter 14, you actualize events from the present intersection of spirit and flesh, choosing them from probabilities according to your beliefs. All of your physical, mental and spiritual abilities are focused together, then, in the brilliant concentration of present experience. You are not at the mercy of the past, or of previous convictions, unless you believe that you are. If you fully comprehend your power in the present, you will realize that action at that point also alters the past, its beliefs and your reactions. In other words, I am telling you that your present beliefs, in a manner of speaking, are like the directions given to the entire personality, simultaneously organizing and reorganizing past experience according to your current concepts of reality. The future, the probable future, is being altered in the same way. Of course, to look backward for the source of current problems can lead you into the habit of seeking only negative episodes from your past, and prevent you from experiencing it as a source of pleasure, accomplishment, or success, very intently. You are structuring your earlier life through the dissatisfactions of the present, and therefore reinforcing your problems. It is as if you were reading a history book that was devoted only to the failures, cruelties and errors of the race, ignoring all of its accomplishments. Such practices can lead you to use your own history so that it gives a very distorted picture of who and what you are, a picture that then paints your present circumstances. Those given to such practices, constant examination of the past in order to discover what is wrong in the present, too often miss the point. Instead, they constantly reinforce the negative experience from which they are trying to escape. Their initial problems were caused precisely as a result of the same kind of thinking. A great many unsatisfactory conditions result because individuals become frightened at various periods in their lives, doubt themselves, and begin to concentrate upon negative aspects. The situation may be quite different in some ways. Large areas of life may not be touched by certain attitudes, while others are. One person may be completely free physically and in excellent health, and that, because of certain experiences, began to doubt his ability to get along with others. So he may begin to look into his past, with that belief in mind, that he cannot relate, and then find within previous conduct all kinds of reasons to support the idea. If he journeyed through his memories trying to find a different kind of proof instead, then in that same past he would discover instances when he did relate well with others. Your present beliefs structure the memories which will parade before you now, and what you remember will then seem to justify the beliefs. When you are trying to alter your beliefs, look through your past with the new conceptions in mind. If you are ill, remember when you were not. Search your life for proofs of your health. Your very life itself is hard evidence that health is within you. In almost all cases of present limitation, there is one main theme in that particular area. The individual has schooled himself or herself low stress, negative aspects, for whatever reasons. I have frequently said that beliefs cause reality, and that no symptom will simply fade away unless the reason is ascertained, but such reasons go far beneath your current ideas of cause and effect. They involve intimate philosophical value judgments on the part of each individual. Beneath them, the apparent causes of limitations in personal life, there are other far-reaching beliefs, and each individual will use those elements in his private experience to back these up. This applies to any kind of lack or hindrance severe enough to be a problem. You have been taught that you are at the mercy of previous events. Your idea of looking for a source of personal difficulty is to examine the past, but to find what you did wrong there, or what mistakes occurred there, or what inadequate interpretations were made there. Again, regardless of what you have been taught, the point of power is in the present. And again, your present beliefs will be used to structure your recollections. Those memories will be used to reach any conclusion, as statistics can be used. For example, along the way you may settle for a given remembered event or two, and assign to them the reasons for your present behavior. If so, you are already prepared to change your current beliefs and mode of action, and simply use the occurrences or habits of the past as a stimulus or motivation. See Chapter 2. The question, what is wrong with me? Will only lead you to create further limitations, and to reinforce those that you do have, through exaggerating such activities in the present and projecting them into the future. Which you? Which world? These questions are to be answered in the now, as you understand it, through the realization that your power of action is in the present and not in the past. Your only effective point of changing any aspect of your world lies in that miraculous instant connection of spirit and self through neurological impact. To rid yourself of annoying restrictions then, my dear friend, you repattern your past from the present. Whatever your circumstances, you use the past as a rich source, looking through it for your successes, restructuring it. When you search it looking for what is wrong, then you become blind to what was right, in those terms, so that the past only mirrors the shortcomings that now face you. Other events literally become invisible to you. Since basically past and future exist at once, you are at the same time dangerously constructing your future along the same lines. Individuals can go from psychologist to psychologist, from self-therapy to self-therapy, always with the same question, what is wrong? The question itself becomes a format through which experience is seen, and itself represents one of the main reasons for all limitations, physical, psychic or spiritual. See Chapter 5. At one point or another the individual ceased concentrating upon what was right in certain personal areas, and began to focus upon and magnify specific lacks. With all good intentions, then, various solutions are looked for, but all based upon the premise that something is wrong. If such a practice is continued, the concentration upon negatives can gradually bleed out into other previously unblemished areas of experience. You are not at the mercy of past beliefs, therefore. On the other hand, the sooner you begin to act upon new ones the better. Otherwise you are not trusting them in the present. If you are poor and want to have more money, and try to maintain a belief in abundance, while still faced with the fact of present poverty, you must in your reality make some symbolic move that shows you are willing to accept a change. As foolish as it may sound, you should give some money away, or in whatever manner that suits you act as if you did have more money than you physically have. You must respond to your new beliefs, so that neurologically the new message gets across. You perform habitually in certain manners as a result of your beliefs. Now if you willfully change some of those habits then you are also getting the message across. The initiative must come from you, and in the present. In a very real manner of speaking, this means changing your viewpoint, that particular perspective with which you view your past and present and imagine your future. You must look within yourself for evidences of what you want in terms of positive experience. Examine your past with that in mind. Imagine your future from the PowerPoint of the present. In such a way at least you are not using the past to reinforce your limitations, or projecting them into the future. It is only natural to contrast what you want with what you have, and it is very easy to become discouraged in so doing, but looking for errors in the past will not help you. A correctly utilized 5-minute period of time can be of great benefit. However, in this period concentrate upon the fact that the point of power is now. Feel and dwell upon the certainty that your emotional, spiritual and psychic abilities are focused through the flesh, and for 5 minutes only direct all of your attention toward what you want. Use visualization or verbal thought, whatever comes most naturally to you, but for that period do not concentrate upon any lacks, just upon your desire. Use all of your energy and attention. Then forget about it. Do not check to see how well it is working. Simply make sure that in that period your intentions are clear. Then in one way or another, according to your own individual situation, make one physical gesture or act that is in line with your belief or desire. Behave physically, then, at least once a day in a way that shows that you have faith in what you are doing. The act can be a very simple one. If you are lonely and feel unwanted, it can merely involve your smiling at someone else. If you are poor, it can involve such a simple thing as buying an item you want that costs 2 cents more than the one you would usually buy. Acting on the faith, even that feebly, that the 2 cents will somehow be given you or come into your experience, but acting as if you had more than you do. In health terms, it involves conducting yourself once a day as though you were not sick in whatever way given you. But the belief in the present, reinforced for 5 minutes, plus such a physical action, will sometimes bring literally awesome results. Such effects will occur, however, only if you cease looking into the past for what is wrong and stop reinforcing your negative experience. These same principles can be used in any area of your life and in each you are choosing from a variety of probable events. Those of you who believe in reincarnation in more or less conventional terms can make the error of using or blaming past lives, organizing them through your current beliefs. It is bad enough to believe that you are at the mercy of one past, but to consider yourself helpless before innumerable previous errors from other lives puts you in an impossible situation. The conscious will is robbed of its power to act. Such lives exist simultaneously. They are other expressions of yourself, interacting, but with each conscious self possessing the point of power in its own present. It is for this reason that past life information is so often used to reinforce current personal social situations, because, like the past in this life, such memories are constructed through present belief. If such information is given to you by another, by a psychic, for example, that individual is also very apt to pick up those lives that make sense to you now, and, unconsciously of course, to structure them precisely along the lines of your beliefs. This may not seem obvious. Emphatically, if an individual believes that he is basically unworthy, he will recall, or be given, those lives that justify that idea. If he thinks he must pay for his sins now, then that belief will attract memory of those lives that will reinforce it. This will be highly organized recall, leaving out everything that does not apply. If an individual believes that he is being taken advantage of, and is caught in a mundane existence, unappreciated, then he may receive from himself or others information showing that in other lives he was greatly honored, thereby reinforcing his belief that now he is taken for granted, or worse. These statements of mine are general, for each individual will have his or her own way of reinforcing beliefs. If you think you are ill, most likely past life information will show that you committed crimes for which you are now doing penance. In whatever framework you choose, you will always find proper reinforcement for your belief. The truth as far as it can be stated is this: you form your reality now, in capital letters, through the intersection of soul and flesh, and in your terms the present is your point of power. Each of your reincarnational selves is born as a creature in flesh, like you. Each one has its own points of power, or successive moments in which it also materializes daily existence in a linear manner from all the probabilities available to it. In a way that will be explained in another book for those interested in such matters, there is a kind of coincidence with all of these present points of power that exist between you and your reincarnational selves. There are even biological connections in terms of cellular memory. See the 653rd session in Chapter 13. So through your current beliefs you can, in your own space and time, attract tendencies toward certain experiences shared by these others. There is a constant interaction in this multidimensional point of power, therefore, so that in your terms one incarnated self draws from all of the others what abilities it wants, according to its own specific, localized beliefs. These selves are different counterparts of yourself in creaturehood, experiencing bodily reality, but at the same time your organism itself shuts out the simultaneous nature of experience. This does not mean that at other levels you cannot perceive it, but that generally speaking events must seem to appear in a series. In quite real personal and racial terms, the past is still happening. You create it from your present according to your beliefs. A removed appendix will not reappear physically. There are certain frameworks that are accepted, built into your creaturehood. There is far greater freedom, however, even on the cellular level. Any good demonstration of hypnosis will clearly show that the point of power is in the present, and that beliefs dictate your experience. There is no magic in hypnosis. Each of you utilize it constantly. See the 620th session in Chapter 4. Only when particular procedures are assigned to it, and when it is set aside from normal life, does hypnotic suggestion seem so esoteric. Structured hypnosis merely allows the subject to utilize full powers of concentration, thereby activating unconscious mechanisms. With the distortions present in organized procedures, however, and the misunderstandings of the practitioners, the phenomenon seems to show a different face indeed. The subject agrees to accept the beliefs of the hypnotist. Since telepathy exists, as described in Chapter 3, the subject will react not only to verbal commands but to the unspoken beliefs of the practitioners, thereby proving, of course, the hypnotist theory of what his profession is. Hypnosis clearly shows in concentrated form the way in which your beliefs affect your behavior in normal life. The various methods simply focus all of your concentration upon a specific area, shutting out any distractions. Your beliefs act like a hypnotist, then. As long as the particular directions are given, so will your automatic experience conform. The one suggestion that can break through is this: I create my reality, and the present is my point of power. If you do not like the effects of a belief, you must alter it, for no manipulation of the exterior conditions themselves will release you. If you truly understand your power of action and decision in the present, then you will not be hypnotized by past events. Think of the present as a pool of experience drawn from many sources, fed, in your terms, by tributaries from both the past and the future. There are an infinite number of such tributaries, probabilities. And through your beliefs you choose from these, adjusting their currents. For example, if you constantly focus on the belief that your early background was damaging and negative, then only such experiences will flow into your present life from the past. It does no good to say, "But my life was traumatic," therefore reinforcing the belief. You must in one way or another modify that conviction, or preferably change it entirely, or you will never escape from its effects. This does not mean lying to yourself, but if it seems to you that your background held no joys, accomplishments or pleasures, then you are lying to yourself now. You have concentrated upon the negative to such a degree that anything else seems invisible. See the 644th session in Chapter 11. From the present you have hypnotized yourself, viewing the past not as it was to your experience, but as it appears now in the light of your current beliefs. You have reconstructed it. So when I tell you to restructure your past, I am not telling you to do something that you have not already done. Hypnosis, again, is merely a state of concentrated attention in which you focus upon beliefs. Popular demonstrations lead the public to believe that the subject must fall asleep or be completely relaxed, yet this is not the case. The one prerequisite is an intense concentration upon specific incoming data to the exclusion of everything else. Therefore, the orders given are clear-cut, to the point. No conflicting information is received, no cross messages. The shutting out of superfluous data and the narrowing of focus are the two most important ingredients. Relaxation can help simply because the body messages are also quieted, and the mind not concerned with them. Many beliefs were originally accepted as a result of such a situation, without any formal induction, but when the circumstances were right, a period of panic induces immediate accelerated concentration. All the forces of energy are mobilized at once, while little relaxation is usually involved. On the other hand, such beliefs can be accepted when it appears that the conscious mind is asleep, or dulled as in periods of shock, or during operations. The focus of attention is narrowed then, and intensified. One of the troubles is that two specific distinctions are made between the conscious and unconscious minds. They interlap. Hypnosis, used properly without the mumbo-jumbo usually assigned to it, is an excellent method of inserting new beliefs and getting rid of old ones. This is only true, however, if you realize the power of your conscious mind in that moment, and understand the ability of your consciousness to mobilize unconscious reactions. It is of greatest importance that you realize several points before you try the method I suggest. First of all, the unconscious is not a sponge, indiscriminately accepting material regardless of the considerations of your conscious self. All beliefs or suggestions are first sifted through your conscious mind, and only those that you accept are then permitted their penetration into the other areas of the self. No negative beliefs were thrust upon you, therefore, despite your will. Period. None can be inflicted upon you that you do not consciously accept. In formal hypnosis, the hypnotist and the subject play a game. If the hypnotist orders the subject to forget what happened, that individual will pretend to do so. In that context, both hold the belief in the resulting forgetfulness, and it is the power of belief that is being demonstrated. But instead, this is taken as an indication that the conscious mind is helpless under such conditions, generally speaking, and this is not the case. Quite without any inductions, you have hypnotized yourself into all the beliefs that you have. This simply means that you have consciously accepted them, focused upon them, excluded data to the contrary, narrowed your interest to those specific points, and accordingly activated the unconscious mechanisms that then materialize those convictions through physical experience. Formal hypnosis merely brings about an accelerated version of what goes on all the time. It is a perfect example of the instantaneous results possible ideally, but not usually seen practically, as present beliefs negate past ones. We are going to deal with practical methods that will allow you to alter beliefs and change your experience. Later in the book, we'll show how your individual beliefs attract you to joys or disasters. We will also discuss the ways in which mass beliefs will bring many of you together, both in great periods of celebration, or as victims or survivors of disasters that seem to exist apart from yourselves. Let us first of all discuss the nature of hypnosis, quite natural hypnosis, and the ways in which you use it now. Then you will see how you can utilize it quite easily and deliberately in your present point of power.